2.
Pretty exciting stuff in L.A. last night. National League Championship Series. Dodgers didn't want to be in a 3-1 hole. Now they've tied the series at 2-2, winning last night 2-1 in 13 innings, and have their ace on the mound today, Clayton Kershaw. Tough loss for the Brewers, and here is Craig Counsell on that loss as they used all their weapons in the bullpen and don't know their availability today in Game 5.
I think anytime you got to cover 13 innings and there's a game the next day, you're always worried about that. And, you know, we'll have to kind of put our heads together and look at what we got. We've got some guys that we've used quite a bit. We were able to stay away from a couple guys tonight. But, you know, we're in a little bit of a tough spot for sure. And I think that's just the nature of a 13-inning game and losing your starter in the second inning.
Dave Roberts, manager of the Dodgers, it was all about winning the ball game.
I mean, I guess a poker reference, we were all in. And one of the crazier games where there's really no margin on either side. Can't say enough about our defense. The play that Cody made out there was incredible. And the bullpen, just Rich initially was good and gave us 5 innings. But the bullpen, what they did tonight against a very good offensive club, my hat's off to these guys.
Cody Bellinger, who struggled in the World Series last year and this year in the playoffs with the big hit, the win it, as you heard earlier, and then the amazing catch that Dave Roberts referred to, as the Dodgers have tied the series at 2-2. We'll talk more about the ALCS coming up in a moment, as the Red Sox win last night 8-2 to take a 2-1 lead over the Astros. But first, we turn over to Dusty. Regional volleyball yesterday.
Yes, a lot of teams went into the day still alive, and at the end of the day, as the dust settled, just 2 1A schools from our area have made it on to the sub-state tournaments, and Thunder Ridge was the regional champion at the Northern Valley 1A regional there in Almena, as they won over Logan in the semifinals. They had a first-round bye as the number 1 seed. They beat Logan in the semis and they beat Northern Valley in 2 in the championship. So they'll move on to one of two 4 team sub-states at Ransom Western Plains coming up on Saturday. And brackets will be released later today for all the sub-states here in the state. The other team that made it on to sub-state from our area, St. John's Tipton, they were the number 1 seed at the Solomon Regional yesterday. They had a first-round bye. Came back from the brink and fought off 2 match points against Lincoln to win the second set in the semifinals, and then went on to win the third to make it to the championship match. And then Solomon beat St. John's Tipton in the championship in 2, 26-24 and 25-22. So it was a very close championship match, but Solomon got the win. St. John's Tipton, the regional runner-up in Solomon there yesterday. So everybody else fell by the wayside there. Lincoln again falling to St. John's Tipton at Solomon's. Southern Cloud lost first round to Solomon there in Solomon yesterday. Pike Valley and Rock Hills both lost their first round matches at the Hanover Regional. Pike Valley falling to Lynn in 3, and Rock Hills lost to Clifton Clyde in 2. And then also it was Osborne falling to Logan in the first round in Almena yesterday in 2. Lakeside won their first match in 3 over Stockton at Northern Valley yesterday, but then lost to Northern Valley in 3 in the semifinals to see their season come to a close. And then probably one of the toughest regionals in the state in Class 1A is where Sylvan Lucas was, and despite finishing with a 33-4 record, they lost in the semifinals to Otis Bison in 2. So Sylvan Lucas, the regular season Northern Plains League champion, goes out in the regional round of the playoffs here in 2018. So again, sub-state brackets will be released today for 1A as well as 3A for the Beloit Lady Trojans and 2A for Smith Center. We'll keep an eye on all that. And speaking of the Lady Trojans, they wrapped up their third consecutive NCAA league title with a sweep of Republic County last night, winning both matches in 2. They finished the regular season 12-0 in the league, 31-4 overall, and their fourth league title in 5 years. They've also now won 39 of their last 40 league matches, so they've been dominant in winning those league titles as well. The Lady Trojans now, as we mentioned, await the sub-state bracket pairings, which come out later today. So if you missed any of the scores from volleyball last night, they're all posted at ncksports.com. And that's what's going on in volleyball, a busy day yesterday.
Once we get the brackets, we'll post them at ncksports.com, have them on sports as soon as we can. Hopefully have those by noon today.
Yep.
And locker room chats tonight?
Yeah, tonight we talk to the head coaches of Beloit, Osborne, Smith Center, Lincoln, and Thunder Ridge. Those will begin around 5:10 here this evening, and then later this evening as well, they'll be posted at our podcast at katycountry94.com.
High school football on Friday, it will be Thunder Ridge at Osborne on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com. St. John's Tipton at Rock Hills for a district championship on Z96.3 Lake and katycountry94.com. And we'll have Beloit at Russell live video stream at nckssports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. All right, back to the baseball playoffs. We'll talk more about the playoffs with Les Norman, former Royal, host of Breaking the Norm, his syndicated radio show that he has in Kansas City, and former Royal. We'll talk more about the Royals as well and their offseason, what they're able to do this past year. A little bit more optimism for Royals fans than maybe you would have thought after this past year when they only won 58 games, finished strong. But the Red Sox finished strong yesterday. Grand slam to finish off the Astros in Game 3 in Houston.
And the 1-1 to JBJ. Swinging a high drive to right field. Reddick going back. Back to the warning track. This ball is going, and it is gone. A grand slam for Jackie Bradley Jr. And the Red Sox have broken it open. They lead it 8-2. Can you believe it?
So the Astros are down 2-1, and they have game 4 today in Houston. Alex Cora, manager of the Red Sox, on the win in Houston.
Coming to this environment, it's not easy to win here. This is a place that they feed off the crowd. They're very comfortable here offensively. And then to show up today and play the way we did, I'm very proud of them.
Of course, Alex Cora was on A.J. Hinch's staff last year, the Astros, when they won the World Series and beat the Red Sox in the playoffs. So now Alex Cora is on the other side of things. And A.J. Hinch, the manager of the Astros, talks about the loss.
Well, we played clean. We didn't get a two-out hit. And we didn't get into the game very easily. The top of their order did a good job, getting a couple runs in the first. And then they won the latter third of the game with the explosive inning. So, cleanliness. We caught the ball. We played pretty good defense. We made some great plays. It's a 3-2 ball game until all hell broke loose in the eighth inning. So a couple hit by pitches and a huge swing by Bradley, and there's the game.
Dodgers Brewers tied 2-2, game 5 this afternoon, late this afternoon, 4:05 on FS1. What do both teams have left in the bullpen? Well, here's the thing. When you have Clayton Kershaw, you might not need a lot of the bullpen. Big advantage for the Dodgers, but watch. Kershaw will go out and get bombed.
Yeah.
Because Kershaw hasn't had a lot of success in the postseason, although better the last couple of years. Wade Miley, what a great first name. Wade Miley will be the pitcher for the Brewers. He pitched well earlier in the series. Pivotal Game 5, Brewers at Dodgers, 4:05 today on FS1. Game 4 between the Red Sox and the Astros in Houston. Boston up 2-1, 7:39 this evening on TBS. Charlie Morton, who hasn't pitched in the playoffs yet, but was one of the stars for Houston and won the Warriors series a year ago, will take on Rich Porcello of the Red Sox. And then tomorrow, Game 5, Red Sox at Astros in the ALCS on TBS. All right, former Chief. All of a sudden, the Chiefs are getting all kinds of former Chiefs. Ron Parker, of course, got the last minute before the season began. They had problems at safety, injuries of Sorensen and Barry. Now the Chiefs have some injury concerns on the offensive line, and now they've brought back Jeff Allen. Jeff Allen left the Chiefs after being drafted in the second round in 2012, was a solid player on that offensive line for the Chiefs, made 36 career starts, but he then signed with the Texans as a free agent prior to the 16 campaign. He made 26 starts for Houston over the past two seasons before being placed on the physically unable to perform list this offseason with undisclosed injury. The Texans released Allen in July, and Allen is versatile. He can play guard, he can play tackle, and he will be brought in to provide some depth on the offensive line for the Chiefs. Is it possible another former Chief could be back as a Chief? It's so crazy. Yesterday I asked about Derek Johnson. Next thing you know, he was cut later in the day. The Raiders have cut Derek Johnson, the former Chiefs linebacker, started just one game for the Raiders this season. If I'm Derek Johnson, I'm like, thankfully I've been let go because the Raiders are a mess right now. And the Chiefs, he maybe would be a good situational run stopper to bring in. Still at the age of 35, but there's a reason why they let him go as well. Yeah. He was declining. I don't know if he'll join the Chiefs or not, but Derek Johnson is available and a former Chief great who will be inducted in the Chiefs Hall of Fame someday. One of the best linebackers the Chiefs have ever had. So perhaps the Chiefs will have a reunion where they all get back and play, which probably for those aging guys would be better if they just have a reunion after their careers are over.
Yeah.
And hang out at Arrowhead and bang the drum before a game, 5, 6, 7 years from now. But we shall see. The Chiefs need any help that they can get. Okay, the Rams are the only undefeated team left in the National Football League. They're 6-0. The Chiefs with the best record in AFC at 5-1. So the question I have, who's the biggest threat to the Rams in the NFC? If the Rams don't make it to the Super Bowl, who is going to stop them?
Man, you could go a lot of different ways, probably.
Can you? Can you really?
Well, I mean, I don't think that who's great in the NFC after the Rams, you know what I mean? Like,
well, I can think of one that's definitely
the Saints are playing pretty good right now.
They won four in a row.
Yeah.
4-1. That's probably the team I would pick.
That's probably where I'd go.
They got Mark Ingram back. People forget Mark Ingram wasn't on that team the first four games. He was suspended. It opens up what they do offensively. Their defense has gotten better after being shredded by Ryan Fitzpatrick in week one. And they had some solid wins since they lost their opener. They're 4-1. To me, that's the easy answer. And to me, there's only two other teams that even qualify. So when you say go in a lot of directions, I disagree. I don't think there's a lot of directions to go here at all. Because let's just go by process elimination. Do you think the Seahawks are a threat to the Rams?
No.
Okay. We know the Cardinals and 49ers aren't. Do you think the Falcons are a threat to the Rams?
No, not right now.
Tampa Bay?
Yeah.
Carolina?
No.
See, I say no, no.
Probably not.
Detroit?
No.
No. Giants?
No.
Do you think the Eagles are a threat to the Rams? Because I don't.
Not right now, the way they're playing, but
could be.
It's early.
Could be. At the end
that's
of the year.
The thing with a lot of these teams, it's still early.
I'll just eliminate the Eagles because they won the Super Bowl last year. Cowboys?
No.
Redskins? I'd say no.
Nah.
Okay, so the only other three teams I can come up with are all in the same division.
Yeah. I'm thinking.
Green Bay, if a healthy Aaron Rodgers, could stop the Rams, but I don't think that would be enough. And the Vikings, who are a little bit inconsistent, and their defense hasn't been good. And then there's the Bears, who have a second-year quarterback, but their defense is pretty good, but a first-year head coach. See, I really think there's only two teams that can prevent the Rams from winning the Super Bowl. And the only two right now, to me, is the Packers with a healthy Aaron Rodgers, because he can carry you, and the Saints, who have a Hall of Fame quarterback in Drew Brees. Those are the only two teams. I agree with you that the Eagles maybe later this year could be that type of team, but right now you couldn't put them in that category. And I don't put the Vikings there right now. And the Bears, I just don't think – I don't believe in Trubisky is going to lead them to the Super Bowl and knock out the Rams.
Yeah.
So we're talking about real Super Bowl candidates in NFC. I mean, aren't we really talking about only three? Maybe a fourth if
probably,
the Eagles figure
you know,
it out.
That could go any way thing was because I don't really think any of those teams are up to the capability of the Rams right now.
I think the Saints are.
Yeah, and that was for me why I was thinking that. And then I had the three teams that you waited for last. Well, except the Bears, I kind of was thinking Eagles were going through my mind if they could get things turned around since it's early. And then I had the Packers and the Vikings, too, that were kind of going around in my mind there. So.
The Rams are 6-0, but they're not invincible. They almost lost to the Seahawks. They had to go for it on a fourth down and one to keep a drive alive and win 33-31, and the Seahawks are down with tons of injuries on defense. The Rams got by the Broncos, helped out big time by Emmanuel Sanders with a taunting penalty that he thought he had scored a touchdown. They reviewed it. He was down at the one. That was a 15-yard penalty. They settled for three, and the Broncos lost by three. That was 4 points cost them on that penalty. I mean, the Rams could have easily lost in Denver, and the Rams didn't play great against Seattle. So two straight games, the Rams haven't been all that. So I guess what I'm trying to say is the Rams, to me, you know, I think a lot of people are like, well, the Rams, I mean, who else is going to knock them off? I'll be like, well, why are the Rams so – I mean, they're a good team, but – they're not invincible. They're not super dominant. You got to look at the first four games they had this year. They played no one.
No.
So they look really good. They pretty much played no one. And then they played two teams that are a little bit better, which are actually 3-3 team in the Seahawks and a 2-4 team in the Broncos. And the Broncos game on the road, and they skirted by and won in close games. So, you know, I'm not buying this whole Rams are dominant because they're not.
They certainly haven't been the last couple of weeks, that's for sure.
And they don't have Tlaib, which, you know, whether or not that's going to be a big thing, and maybe he'll come back this year, I don't know. I should take one thing back. They did meet Minnesota on a Thursday night when they gave up 500 yards of offense because their defense, the Rams' defense, is so great. I think a lot of people automatically think the Chiefs are going to lose to the Rams in Mexico City, and I understand
I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, because both defenses aren't great. They're star power for the Rams on defense, Donald, Sue, and Peters. But the Chiefs' offense is as good as anybody's. The Rams have a really good offense. Now, Todd Gurley scares me to death if the Chiefs play the Rams. But, you know, turnover or two or a bad decision by Jared Goff or injury, I mean, the Chiefs can beat the Rams. The Chiefs can beat anybody in this league. And honestly, I think they can lose to half the teams if their defense is, you know, so god-awful as it was the other night. So I just think the Saints, maybe I'm a little bit prejudiced. I picked the Saints to make the Super Bowl for the year. But they have absolutely righted the ship. And they look really, their offense, you talk about the Chiefs offense, we talk about the Rams offense. The Saints offense have two outstanding running backs, Mark Ingram and Kamara. And now you got Drew Brees with Michael Thomas. And the defense is the key. And the defense is getting much better week in and week out for the Saints. Whereas the Rams defense, I would say, is, you know, gotten a little bit better. The Chiefs defense has not. So maybe the top two teams in NFL are in the NFC. Rams, yeah. Then Saints. Then I would rank it probably Patriots, since they beat the Chiefs head-to-head. And then the Chiefs would be my fourth team, although I'd put Pittsburgh right behind the Chiefs.
Yeah. So most of the power rankings I see have Rams, Patriots, Chiefs, 1, 2, 3.
See, one I saw the other day was Rams, Saints, Patriots, Chiefs.
Really?
I don't know how you can put the Chiefs ahead of the Patriots.
No, you can't.
I don't think you should.
No.
I see how you can, I guess, but I don't think you should. Not that it really matters. It'll be decided later this year. NBA season is underway, and last night it was the Warriors getting their rings, and then the Warriors went out and beat the Thunder. Thunder without Russell Westbrook.
Three straight free throws to the Thunder. We have a two-point game. Curry away from a Looney screen, changes direction, takes a 17-footer, got fouled. It's good, and he's going to go on the line.
Curry with 32, Durant with 27. The Warriors get their rings and avoid a season-opening loss, which they've had the last couple of years, and they beat the Thunder. I think the Thunder, I was watching them last night. One thing that should be pointed out, we focus on Carmelo Anthony leaving the Thunder, which is addition by subtraction for the Thunder and most teams. Same thing with Dwight Howard when you get rid of him. But they brought in Dennis Schroeder, and he is a really good shooting guard slash point guard combo guard they got from the Hawks, who averaged 19 points a game last year. He's in a serious upgrade overall for the team compared to what Carmelo brought to the table last year. Schroeder is a better offensive player. He's a better defender. He's younger. And, you know, I think the Thunder, the fact they got him is why they're being a little bit cautious and not rushing Russell Westbrook back, which they shouldn't from his knee surgery. And I think the Thunder will be able to hold water and not sink without Westbrook early in the year, bring him back when he's really actually 100%. And now you've got a guy that can spell Westbrook where he doesn't have to play maybe as many minutes. And they also can go small. They could go Paul George at the small forward slot, Adams at center, and they can go Schroeder at the off guard, Westbrook as the point guard, or flip him around a little bit. So, and Westbrook doesn't bring the ball up all the time. I like that addition by the Thunder, and I think the Thunder, to me, I think they could very well be the third best team in the West behind the Warriors and the Rockets. Everybody's picking the Jazz as the third best team. But I think I like what the Thunder did this offseason. It's not sexy and flashy because it's not a superstar in his declinement. It's actually a guy in his prime.
Well, I said when they made the trade with the Hawks that day on this show that
not a lot of people talk about it
too much. Addition for the Thunder that they're going to like.
Yeah.
Now, the guy was just not happy in Atlanta. And has the potential to be really, really good in this league.
And he didn't come to the Thunder and he's just going to be a backup point guard that plays 15 minutes a game. He's going to play a lot, whether he starts or not.
And what I said that day is, like, as long as Russ can coexist with him, they're going to be fine.
Yeah, oh, I think
and that's going to be a good addition for their team. I said that right away.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think a lot of – you're right. I don't think a lot of people care or thought about it because he's a guy that's playing in Atlanta that nobody really cares about, that he's not that superstar from the East that everybody knows. And, you know, the same way the year before, you know.
He's not a household name.
Some of the guys that are coming in are more important. The guys that you're trading might be more important than Carmelo Anthony coming in.
Some people may not even been aware that Atlanta has an NBA franchise, let alone that there's a guy that averaged 19 points a game traded to the Thunder. And the Thunder didn't have to give up a lot either. So that was a good move, I thought, by the Thunder.
Terrible contract. That's all they had to give up.
That worked out well. All right, so the Thunder lose to the Warriors last night, 108-100. Paul George had 27 in the loss. How about the Celtics and the Sixers? Everybody's talking about how the rivalry is back. More on that in a moment. Jason Tatum, a superstar in the making, as the Celtics beat the Sixers last night.
Tatum against Embiid, dribbling between his legs. Several times, steps to his left, Embiid though has him locked up, 5 on the shot clock. Tatum now loses him, gets free at 19 feet, jumper, banks it in.
And the Celtics roll past the Sixers last night by a final of 105-87. Tatum with 23, and Gordon Hayward back after a horrendous injury last year. He had 10 points. Good to see him on the floor. You have Irving. You have Hayward. You add them to a team that made it to the NBA Eastern Conference Finals and lost in 7 games to the Cavs. They're only going to get better if they stay healthy. That is a dangerous team, no question. And after the game, people are talking media about the rivalry between the Celtics and the Sixers. And Joel Embiid said, and I love Joel Embiid because he's very frank, and he said, this ain't no rivalry. He said, this ain't no rivalry. He goes, they kick our arsh every single time. He's right.
Yeah.
He's right. I remember, you know, when Bob Huggins came at K-State, and I was like, well, about the rivalry? He's like, well, it's not really a rivalry until we beat them. And then maybe we should beat them at their place once in a while. That would make it a real rivalry. Good point. Is it really a rivalry when you get your butt beat all the time by the same team? Maybe because of certain situations like Yankees, Red Sox. Like, you know, if the Yankees just own the Red Sox for 10 years in a row, well, they've established that many years before that. But the Sixers, Celtics, yeah, there was a rivalry for a while, but there hasn't been one for quite some time because both franchises have been down for a while. And now all of a sudden they're both good, so the rivalry's back. Well, if one team continuously beats the other, does that really mean the rivalry's back? Embiid says no.
No, yeah.
I would say it's a rivalry. I would say it's not anywhere close to what it once was, and I think that's what Embiid might be implying.
It's not a heated rivalry or
not
a rivalry
yet.
That means a whole lot at this point. And you can say the same of KU, K-State basketball. You know, it's a rivalry,
right?
But it's not.
It's not.
It's not where it needs to be for people to be engaged and the whole country to be engaged in something like that, other than the people that are just the two teams and schools and fan bases that are involved.
If you want KU and K-State to really be big-time rivals to get on the map a little bit, K-State's got to beat KU about every other time, split every year, and KU's got to actually beat K-State in football, you know, a few times. So that would help the rivalry.